This is the Scorebook Live Today podcast, a podcast about high school sports in the state of Washington. It's week 9 of the high school football season. It's Thursday, October 31st. It's Halloween when we record this, and what's scarier than talking about the NCAA? All jokes aside, I'm joined, as always, by analyst, columnist, former NBA player, Dan Dickow in Spokane. Todd Millis will join us later. Dan, how you celebrating Halloween, and how's everything treating you?
I usually pick a costume about 10 minutes before my family and I head out with the kids. And last 2 years, I've kind of nailed it. Blake Shelton 2 years ago. Last year, I was Cousin Eddie from Christmas Vacation. But I'm going to have to figure that one out on the fly tonight. But looking forward to it with my kids, although it's going to be very cold over here in Spokane.
Yeah. Do you guys trick or treat? And is it all of your kids at the same
Absolutely.
Time?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a family event. Something our kids really look forward to throughout the year.
Is there somebody manning the house? Do you make sure that anyone that comes your way is greeted with candy?
No, unfortunately, we're that selfish family that turns the lights off and doesn't give people candy. We just go to other houses and get candy ourselves. But part of that has to do with we're kind of a little bit on a little bit of acreage, and so we don't have neighbors right on top of us like a traditional neighborhood. So that's the reason why.
So we've got a lot to talk about today. Just a quick breakdown. You and I are going to talk about the NCAA's significant news this week regarding players, college athletes profiting off name, image, likeness. How does that affect the top Washington high school athletes across all sports at the next level? After then, Todd Millis and I are going to talk about this week in high school football. It's week 9. Playoffs are in the present future. There's a ton of implications on games this week. So Todd and I go deep on 4A, deep on the games that we are going to be at this week. Before then, on Tuesday, the NCAA announced a unanimous vote approving the start to changing its rules, which allows college athletes to profit off of their own name, image, and likeness. It could retool college athletics as we know it now. The move is undoubtedly in response to multiple states introducing legislation to kind of bypass the NCAA at the state level. It's put the NCAA on defense. Dan, what was your reaction to the NCAA kind of coming out and trying to get ahead of this a little bit? Did it surprise you?
No, it didn't surprise me, simply for the fact that a number of states have passed legislation in the recent months moving in the direction of allowing college athletes to make a little bit of money. You know, This is typical NCAA, just stall the process and not allow anything to happen quickly. So I really, honestly, I don't expect a lot of movement quickly on this. I don't think college athletes are going to be getting paid anytime soon. I just think that is such a difficult and hard question to figure out how that would work. What sports would the athletes be paid in? What sports wouldn't get paid? Would it be based on the revenue that your program brings in? Would it be revenue based off of maybe donorship booster dollars that have come in? How do you make this all fair and equal and balanced? And I understand and I know that nothing in the business world is ever particularly fair, but to do this would be very difficult at the college level. Now, on the flip side, really what they're trying to do here is say that we will let you because you're a good student athlete and you might have the ability to make a little bit of money off of your name, image, and likeness. We will allow you to find a way to make money off of that. Now, that's where it becomes very dicey and very tricky and very hard because people think that just because you go to college, you're going to be marketable. Well, in my estimation, there were only two players in all of college basketball last year, honestly, that were marketable. And that would have been Zion Williamson, and the other one was Rui Hachimura at Gonzaga because of his coming from Japan and having the whole nation of Japan enthralled with what he was doing. I mean, there was about 15 or so Japanese sports reporters, as well as just reporters following every Gonzaga game last year to do a Rui update. So those are really the only two guys that would have made any kind of money off of this. The hard part is at the college level, going from high school to college, how do you predict and translate and project who's going to be those impact guys? And then before you know it, they're gone and they're off in the pros. So do you allow these players to sign with agents at an earlier age? Do you then, or do you have schools that already have marketing agreements with major corporations, but do they now have to sign marketing agents that would handle strictly relationships and deals with players? Just how would that work? I think it's a very, 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 very small step in the right direction, but I don't think what anybody understands is just how difficult this puzzle is going to be to put together.
You brought up a lot of good points there, Dan, and I think that kind of at the top, we should say that this doesn't mean that, you know, college athletes get paid tomorrow, as you said. And it doesn't mean that the schools are going to start to, you know, be shelling out money to college athletes for, you know, as some sort of wage. What this means is that name, image, likeness, divorced from the university setting, divorced from the NCAA, that athletes would be able to, you know, potentially on their own, in their own autonomy, profit off of themselves. Now, you brought up a good point. The international marketability of someone like Rui Hachimura, someone like Zion Williamson, who are essentially household names, sure. Now, I'm wondering, so you played, obviously, at the University of Washington. You played at Gonzaga before you went on to the pros. You were a recognizable name, a recognizable face. So what if at the local level, say I know you're involved in business with barbershops now, but say that a barbershop came to you and said, all right, Dan Dickow, we want you to be the face of our barbershop. We're just located in Spokane. It's not a big money, you know, Nike, Adidas apparel deal or a big money, you know, ad deal. But it's something local. It's something that you would do, you know, outside of it'd be considered work outside of your duties with, you know, your school and with basketball. Is that something reasonable? Is that something that you think that, you know, within Spokane and just within the context of, you know, how recognizable Gonzaga players are just within the Spokane community, like that's something that could have reasonably happened, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're onto a reasonable train of thought, but Gonzaga honestly is one of the very, very few exceptions. You know, Kentucky might be an exception, but even if you're looking at like a really good basketball program from a power conference that might not, you know, be a national title contender, but they're a good program. You know, this, for example, take a say a Big Ten team. You know, will their players have an opportunity to have a marketing opportunity? It's hard to say. Now, the hard part now also becomes is college student athletes, to stay eligible to play, you still have to take care of your grades. And let's face it, not a lot of kids are able to go from high school to college and be great at time management. So the studies are going to be one thing. The next thing is how are they going to fit this possible secondary venture into their day-to-day kind of workload as a student athlete? Although, again, it would probably be just an occasional appearance here or there, you know, but what sets the market rate? Is it the NCAA? Is it just a free capital system where, hey, you can do whatever anybody bids you to? Well, if that's the case, maybe you are now opening yourself up to what people are saying of college athletes getting paid. Because if there is a big booster at a university that owns a car dealership that wants to give cars now, that wants to, you know, pay $15,000 for an afternoon of signing autographs or whatever it may be, you know, that's where all these gray ideas and thoughts are coming into play where, quite frankly, I'm glad I'm not going to be in the room having to make a decision.
So the state of Washington has a number of athletes who are relevant, even in high school, relevant nationally. You have Paolo Banchero, who's one of the top recruits in the class of 2021 in basketball, who will have his choice of some of the top programs. And already does. You have Savelle Smalls on the football side for the class of 2020. You have JT Tuimoloau at Eastside Catholic, defensive lineman in 2021. These are guys that transcend relevance in the state of Washington. Although the NCAA board wants, it's reported they want new rules implemented by January 2021, which would be a year from this January. Say, assuming that they're, that name, image, likeness is that this rule kind of is, and these limitations are lifted for those types of athletes, for that kind of top 1%, that top tier of athlete. Do you think that this type of rule changes things for them, and that this rule will affect some of the players that we're seeing now on the high school stage in Washington?
That's so hard to answer because here's the thing. Those guys that you named, Tuimoloau, Banchero, Smalls, people in Washington who really follow high school sports, yes, they know them. People that follow – for example, say they track just the five-star athletes in particular sports, being the big ones, basketball, football, they know those names. But take, for example, I believe Smalls committed to UW, and, so he's staying in his backyard, so his name recognition will be different than, say, for example, if a Banchero decided to go to, say, a Tennessee, which is a place that he just took a home visit, or excuse me, an official visit. What is his recognizability? What is his opportunity in Tennessee? And are people going to be attracted to the possibility of, having him being a quote-unquote marketing piece? That is so up in the air to be determined, where, again, it's there are so many gray areas here that is very hard to kind of work through.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But I'm kind of taking your hypothetical and taking it a step forward a little bit. Envision, say Banchero goes to Tennessee. Say he has a monster freshman year. He becomes, one of the best players in the country. And against all odds, he decides to return to Tennessee for his sophomore year. So he's had a full year of establishing himself as one of the top players in the country, hypothetically. Now, that decision, whether to, take the probably financially sound road, say in this case, and go to the NBA draft where he could reasonably be projected high, it changes his decision if there's a financial incentive to return to Tennessee, does it not?
Yeah, but again, at the end of the day, say there is that possible decision to be made, and I'm just speaking from, I would imagine 99.9% of athletes who would be in that position, they dream of playing in the NBA or they dream of playing in the NFL as opposed to one more year of college, one more year of going to class. And I hate to say it because that's just how it is. I mean, very rarely anymore in this day and age do you have 3-4 year college players that then make it, especially in the NBA in particular. NFL, yes, much different just because of the structure of the game and how it's played and evaluation, and guys need to be a little more mature. But for the basketball side, I think the easiest and best fix on the basketball side is to get rid of the one and done. Just let guys, yeah, if they're ready, go from high school to the pros. The reason they changed the rule years ago was because they had a couple guys that decided to do it that didn't pan out for whatever, for lack of their work ethic, lack of maybe organization's willingness to provide the resources. But the way the NBA has grown, those resources are they're there. That's on the front office's staff to evaluate if the work ethic and the talent and the skill will be there and will be developed. And it also comes down to who that player surrounds themselves with. What are their parents? What are their guidance counselors, if they're connected really strongly with somebody at school? What is their AAU coach, high school coach telling them? What is their circumstance around them? But I think there's a lot more information that is more easily gathered now to make a good decision, as opposed to years ago when they got rid of the ability to go straight from high school to the pros.
Well, it'll be interesting to keep track of how this developed. Moving on, Dan, we've continued to see a lot of success with these Scorebook Live media days. Now, I believe this week was your fourth. Is that correct? In with the Kinko?
Yeah, we've held four Scorebook Live media days. Three of them on the boys' side, one on the girls. Freddie Rico is currently in the final planning stages of a media day for the west side for the girls' basketball programs who want to join. And we've got one more for a lot of SPSL, NPSL schools coming up next Monday. Looking forward to talking to a number of coaches. We've got about 10 signed up as of now. There's a few more that coaches are trying to manage their schedule to make it. If there's a coach out there listening to the podcast now and maybe the email that I have sent got lost in the mix, maybe it was blocked by a school email, please feel free to reach out and we can get you an invite to join us next Monday.
Yeah, certainly. And one interview you did this week that I want to ask you about, it was a great get and one that I'm really looking forward to watching, was with Alvin Snow, who is an agent, president of an agency. He's based out of Seattle. He's a former standout in at Franklin High School in Seattle. Went on to play in the NBA, I believe. You sat down with him. What did you glean from that conversation? And what's it like sitting down with someone who just has just gone through so much in their career and in a career that's tracked through so many different areas?
Yeah, Alvin's a guy that he's a couple years behind me coming through high school, but I knew who he was. I knew the name. And that's just what happens when you play basketball at a high level, both at the AAU high school level, and then you get to college. So, I tracked him. I knew a little bit about what he was doing, even though he was younger. And then I've gotten to know him a little bit over the last couple of years. Just a lot of it with the Scorebook Live stuff, what we were doing last year with reconnecting with some, former players across the state, so we can kind of update the high school sports fans in the state what different guys are doing. And when Alvin and I got reconnected, I kind of shared a little bit more about what we're doing with Scorebook Live, and he thought it was a phenomenal idea. And he wanted to help connect us with some guys if possible. So, he put me in touch with a number of former Seattle area guys that I didn't have a direct contact to be able to catch up with them. But really, as we continue just to stay in touch and talk about things and Scorebook Live, we're evolving what we're doing. I thought he was a perfect person to sit down with for, one of our what we're calling legends interviews. And the reason why is, he's got a really good story playing in Franklin for a couple really good coaches, Ron Drayton, early in his high school career, and then Jason Kerr at Franklin. But Jason Kerr is now the head coach at O'Day. And then he had some battles in high school with a lot of different guys, had a really successful career at Eastern Washington, played professionally in Europe for 10 years. But I think the interesting thing now is he's an agent. So he's been able to take his high school experience with his love for the game, with his ability to take his work ethic on the basketball court and translate that while tying in his love for basketball with a really unique business perspective as an agent, and he's doing really good things. He represents a lot of players over in Europe who have Northwest roots. Guys, people might know the names, such as Micah Downs. I believe Aaron Brooks is one of the guys that he helped finish his career in Australia. Unfortunately, Aaron Brooks just tore his Achilles a few days back, so his career looks like it's coming to an end. But
oh, did he really? What a bummer.
Yeah, it was not good news to hear. I saw it on Twitter the other night, and Alvin confirmed it. But, you know, the fact is he's got such a passion for the game and a heart to help others be successful in the game of basketball and in game of life.
You can look for that interview and the rest of the many player and coaches interviews in boys and girls basketball on scorebooklive.com/Washington, on our social channels, on Twitter at SBLiveWA, on Instagram at the same handle, and on Facebook at Scorebook Live Washington. You can look for those in the coming weeks as the basketball season draws near. Football season, though, is upon us. And after the break, Todd Millis and I are going to break down some of the top storylines going into the final couple weeks of the high school football season. Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch. We are back on the Scorebook Live Today podcast. I have Todd Millis on the line. We're talking playoff football as week 9 is upon us. Todd, you and I went deep on all the implications, at least at the 3A and 4A levels this week, that these week 9 games have on the postseason. Where are you going to be this week, and where can readers find you?
Yeah, happy Halloween to everybody. You know, it's going to be a...
First and foremost, what are you doing for Halloween?
Well, I'm going to leave candy out on my front porch. Unfortunately, I'm not going to share my address on a podcast. But hey, kids in the neighborhood, make sure you just take 2 or 3 pieces of candy. Don't dump the whole thing in your bag. Let's be nice. So, anyways, yeah, you know, it's that time of year. We have a Thursday Halloween game, which will be nice. I'll be at the Kinko 4A Championship tonight at Pop Keeney Stadium. You know, Eastlake, Bothell. You know, two teams, I think, at the beginning of the season, maybe we didn't think we're going to be these two teams in this particular championship game. But Bothell beat Woodinville, and Eastlake, after that opening week stumble against Monroe, is, you know, they've won 7 in a row. So these two teams are coming in, you know, pretty hot. I'm really looking forward to the Grady Robeson matchup, and I went up there this week on the plateau and did a story on them and how they kind of keep it loose even on weeks of big games. And right now, I think you'd have to consider him sort of the front runner for the 4A Kinko Player of the Year. He's a dual threat, committed to Montana State at quarterback. He's well over 1,000 yards passing. He's, you know, near 700 yards rushing. When it's all said and done, he'll probably be a 1,000 yard type guy. He's made some just absolutely sick plays with his feet, you know, stuff that you'd see if you were diagramming stuff in the dirt at the playground. And he's, you know, he's a state finalist in the 100 meters, so he has speed, but he's a pretty big guy at 6'1", 190, and he's just kind of put it all together and kind of led that team. And it helps. It helps that, you know, he's in his second year. It's been a while since Eastlake has had a multi-year starting quarterback, and he's really taken off in year two of this. You know, Eastlake runs a pretty complex offense that's been inspired by, you know, former coach Steve Jervis, who's really well known around the state, especially on the west side, and Oregon State, former Oregon State quarterback that's won state championships before at Eatonville and Skyline. And that's the offense that Don Bartel runs with some twists. And you know, Grady's done a great job running it. And when things do break down, he's made some big plays, either with the deep ball or running, you know, for the Wolves. But on the other side, you can't take anything away from Bothell. Their two losses are to O'Day and Kennedy Catholic. That's nothing, you know. Those are two pretty darn good teams to lose to. Is Christian Galvin had the year that everybody thought? Maybe not. he's still a dynamite threat. I like Jordan Turner on the outside, you know. So it's, you know, it's a team that might not be as explosive as we maybe thought, but, you know, they're finding ways to win games, especially in within league play. And Tom Boehner does a, you know, we all know Tom Boehner's track record. He's won multiple Kinko championships, a state title. He knows how to win big games. So tonight should be interesting. I picked Bothell to win, but to me, it's a pick 'em game. And I really think the winner of this game has a legitimate argument to a top four or top five seed with the seeding committee here in a couple of weeks, assuming that they win their district playoff game in week 10.
Well, there's no question that that the top team would be should be in strong consideration for such a seed. But I'm wondering, you mentioned that, you know, going into the season, this might not have been the 4A Kinko title game that we had predicted, and it wasn't. What do you make of the 4A Kinko's state playoff potential and just those four teams? I mean, is there a state champion in the 4A Kinko? You know, we have, and we'll go into it, you know, top four that's been pretty solidified across all of our polls, the one that we comprise, the one that the coaches comprise, the AP polls that members of the media around the state vote in. But there's four really good teams in the Kinko. What do you make of their state playoff potential?
Yeah, I mean, these are four teams that have a long track record in the postseason. Now, Mount Si took a hit with Colby Botten, the news of Colby Botten being out for the year with an injury. That's going to greatly hurt Mount Si's chances. So I don't see, you know, there are a lot of that core group is juniors, and with that loss, they might, you know, I wouldn't say that the Wildcats have a fantastic shot at getting deep in the playoffs. So let's just kind of take them off the table for a little bit and talk about the three teams, arguably the top three teams in the league right now. And I think the one that we need to talk about is Woodinville, and where is this team right now? They have playmakers, with Cage Skank and the Johnson kid, but they just haven't been able to get on a roll offensively. Now, the one matchup that I think people are willing to see, the teams that we have at the, you know, in the rankings, in our 4A rankings, are all really, really good offenses. And I think the one matchup that people want to see with the Lake Stevens or a Graham Kapausen or a Kennedy Catholic or maybe even a Camas is, how do those offenses go up against a really good physical, aggressive defense in Woodinville? And Woodinville has the defense to play with any of those offenses. Now, the question is, do they have enough offense to keep up in a game that's in the 20s and 30s? They lost to Bothell in the last minute. So, I mean, they're right there with the other two teams in the Kinko championship game. I suspect with their defense and their pedigree, Woodinville is going to be a factor. How far they go, that remains to be seen. The team that I really, really like, and I like their energy, I like Eastlake. I like the fact that they have a fantastic quarterback who's hot. They have a really good linebacking core. They just don't have a lot of depth. If they lose a key piece in a certain position in their defense, it's tougher for them to make that up than maybe a Woodinville or maybe even a Bothell. So do we have a state championship squad in Kinko 4A? Given the depth that we have with the top three or four teams outside the Kinko, I would say not, but I would give the nod to maybe Eastlake or Woodinville being kind of that, I don't want to say spoiler, but that team that can get hot and really make a run and really create some chaos with the Lake Stevenses and the Kennedy Catholics, the Graham Kapausens and the Camuses of the world.
Certainly, certainly. You're going to be there, Popkini, tonight. By the time you listen to this podcast, that game might have already taken place. So head to scorebooklive.com/Washington for all of Todd's coverage. I'm certainly looking forward to following along. But tomorrow, two more games that will have implications. I'll be at the 4A Greater St. Helens League, essentially the title game, Camas hosting Union, a game that typically is the most anticipated game in that area in Southwest Washington of the season. It's lost a little bit of its luster this year, a little bit of a down year for Union, but it still holds significant playoff implications. Camas clinches the one seed, of course. if they stay undefeated and beat Union. But if Union, if they beat Camas, and if Skyview beats, I believe, Heritage, they'll all be tied atop the standings, and there's going to be a coin flip to determine those top seeds. So Camas, Skyview, Union, as predicted widely before the season, are going to be those top teams. It's Camas coming out on top. I think Camas is going to roll tomorrow. But there's a big question with the Papermakers after their monumental win over Skyview, top 10 team in Skyview last week. And that was that they lost their quarterback. Jake Blair, their junior quarterback, he broke his collarbone in what was the third quarter. It took a hit trying to evade a collapsing pocket. And so for the rest of the season, the Papermakers, who are in that conversation that you and I talked about of those top four, kind of solidified top four teams in the state in 4A, the Papermakers are going to have to do it without their starting quarterback for the year. And so they have a senior in Blake Asciutto, tall, like I want to say he's like 6'4". He knows the system. He's been in the system for a long time. He was able to come in and kind of do what he needed to do for Camas to hold on to win against Skyview in that fourth quarter. But I mean, a lot is to be proved tomorrow. And I'm going to be looking for how these Papermakers look with a new quarterback and how big of a loss Jake Blair is to that team.
Yeah, and I mean, and we could probably discuss this. If you're right now and you were, let's just assume everybody that's supposed to win wins out today and in the district round. You know, we have on Scorebook Live, we have the top four right now. Lake Stevens 1, Graham Kapowsin 2, Kennedy Catholic 3, Camas 4. Would that be your order, Andy, right now if you were in the seeding committee, if you had to assign seeds for those top 4A teams?
Well, okay, so the seeding committee, if I was seeding a playoff right now, that's where it gets a little tricky because it's hard for me not to – I had Camas at 2 going into the week, and then they beat – I think Camas is a top 2 team in the state. They beat a top 10 team in Skyview at Skyview's place. That's a really good win. That Camas shouldn't be punished for winning that game, in my opinion. Now – In our coaches poll, Camas is held tight at number 2 for a couple weeks now. But then we kind of wade into the area of like, okay, so if I'm seeding a playoff right now, do I factor in the fact that their quarterback is going to be out for the rest of the season? Because members of a seeding committee who would be seeding teams, maybe not all of them would, but I bet you some of them would factor that in.
Oh, I think they have to. And I don't – listen, you could put these four teams in a bowl and sort of randomly pick them out, and that order would be okay with me. My personal opinion is that with what Lake Stevens accomplished last year, what they had coming back, and the fact that they're the highest-scoring team in 4A, Tanner Jellison has been fantastic as the first-year starting quarterback. They just have stars everywhere in every level of their offense and defense. They're big. To me, I think they're the most complete team in 4A. I think they deserve that number one seed. There's nothing that they've done in the regular season that's dissuaded me from that opinion. I know they're ranked number one in AP.
I agree.
To me, they're the number one team. Now, after that, You can make arguments for all three of those teams. What Kennedy Catholic has done and accomplished on defense is probably the most improved defense in the state. And we all know about their offensive firepower. I mean, they're explosive. They're going to be a handful for anybody in the state playoffs. Now, I know that they haven't got out of the district round the past couple of years with this group. I fully expect that to change and change in a big way. You could make a case that they're the number two team in the state. You mentioned Camas and what they've done and their tough schedule and the way they've rolled through the GS, the Greater St. Helens League. They could easily be the number two team. And I don't think Graham Kapowsin is getting enough credit. They sort of fly under the radar. They don't have the stars and the self-promoters and, you know, that maybe the other three teams. But we all saw what they did in 7-on-7. they just seem to be a very cohesive group. I've watched them a few times this season. This is the most solid defense I've seen. They can rotate guys in the defensive line. Their offensive line's big. Their quarterback, while he makes mistakes, is also a playmaker. They have a great receiver in Malachi Roberson. They have a big 2-3 big running backs that can run through the middle of the line. I mean, they're a very complete football team as well. You just don't hear a whole lot about them because the way they rolled through the 4A SPSL, and B, they just don't have that marquee guy that everybody goes, wow, let's go see him. So, but I think we have a clear tier of top teams, and there are four of them. It'll be interesting to see what the seating committee does, assuming that everybody wins out here in a couple weeks.
I'm sorry, did Todd Millis just evoke 7-on-7 in a seating argument?
Well, I know it's apples and oranges, but what they did this summer, given that they graduated Dylan Morris, who's now at the UW,
sure.
I think it opened some eyes, and I think it continues to open some eyes because that passing attack has been pretty good, and now we've seen what this defense can do with that secondary and that defensive line, and the linebackers have been pretty solid as well.
So we talked about differences between us, maybe an opinion in these rankings, and we have a few. There's just a few polls around the state that anyone who follows Washington high school football are likely aware of. There's the AP poll, of course, which is voted on by print media members around the state. That's the one you might see perhaps the most. Although I'm not making any judgments. Scorebook Live has two polls. We have the one that our staff compiles, and then we have a coach's poll. And the coach's poll is voted on at the 3A and 4A level by head coaches around the state. Now, with Scorebook Live's poll, Todd, I think and we get questions about this, it seems like, on a weekly basis. But how do you want to just explain to people how we come up with our poll and that it's not just picking straws out of a hat each week?
No, and I'm not saying it's a clear-cut scientific method as well. As a prep coordinator a long time at the Tacoma News Tribune, we did state polls for football and basketball as well. And the first thing I'd like to say is I think we like to give credence to all this research that we do in the preseason. So we have to have a starting point, and a lot of that is that preseason research that we do. We wrote over 200 team previews. We talked to that many coaches. We want to give credence and credibility to that work, to that research, and what coaches think going into the year based on what the teams in their league and around the state have coming back and tradition and things like that. So we're not going to bail on that research the first few weeks of the season. Like if Linden loses to a Mount Baker in week one, we're not going to throw Linden out of the poll. We're not going to, especially given what they accomplished last year, being in the 2A championship game and having a pretty good core coming back. So I know that the public wants, when somebody beats somebody else that's ranked, they initially think that team should be moved ahead of them. And in a lot of times we'll do that, but one game doesn't make a season as well, especially in week one when teams are trying to find themselves. So it's about week five or week six that I start to kind of reconfigure things based on how the season has gone, not just 1 or 2 weeks. And then after that, it's a combination of records, strength of schedule, common opponents, just like I think what other people do when they vote in AP or what other media polls, online media polls do as well. It's it's not a scientific method. There's a lot of feel to it. It's a lot of who's hot and who's not to it here as we get into week nine. But I think, it's tough putting together top tens and classifications, but I think it's more challenging trying to figure out when you put them all in one pool, who are the top 25 teams in the state. And, again, I know fans are going to disagree with our methods and more obviously our choices, but it's not something that we take lightly. It's something that's based on a lot of research and a lot of time spent, talking to people and figuring out where teams are, you know, on a week-to-week basis.
No question. And, like, if you have a disagreement or if you feel like there's something that we're missing, like, please weigh in either on social media, weigh in the comment section of our stories. You know, you guys know how to reach us on email. It's in our Twitter bios. So it's, you know, we want to hear from you. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how it all shakes out in these final 2 weeks as we draw closer to that seeding date. Now, last question before we get out of here. We've talked a lot about, you know, ones through fours and 4A, mostly 4A. Those are the games that we'll be going to. I know you've got a game on Friday that you're going to that's a big one that we haven't even talked about. But before we get out of here, I want to ask you, with all of the presumed number one teams heading into the state playoffs, are any of those teams in jeopardy of losing the top seed in these final 2 weeks?
Yeah, I just, you know, we talked about the 4As, and you could make an argument of a Camas or a Lake State, or I'm sorry, a Camas or a Kennedy Catholic or a Graham Kapausen, you know, over Lake Stevens at a top 4A. To me, that's really the only argument. If you look at the other, five sets of rankings, you know, O'Day being number one, I don't see anybody challenging that. I think with their win over Eastside Catholic, I think they're the solid number one in 3A, especially being unbeaten. Same thing with Tumwater. You know, they're of the legitimate state contenders. They're the only undefeated team. I think if you ask most people around the state, I think they would be their number one seed going into the state playoffs. They're a legitimate state contender with their size. I don't see anybody bumping Tumwater off the one spot in 2A. I mean, look at what Royal and Odessa have done over in Eastern Washington in the 1A and the 1B ranks.
Yeah, undefeated. I wrote about that week in our East notebook. I mean, they're the most. I mean, there's the clearest separation. There is Odessa at 1B and Royal at 1A. I mean, it's not even close.
I mean, they're not letting people score. They're scoring enough points, but they're not letting people score over there. So right now, I mean, I don't even know if there's an argument that either one of those teams should be anywhere off the one line. And then you go to 2B, where Ani's, you know, the only undefeated team in 2B. They've emerged out of this district. Yeah, they had a close game last week at ADNA, but had a pretty big fourth quarter drive to put the game away. Do I think any of those other teams can beat Ani? Yeah, absolutely. On a neutral field with turf and not bad weather. I mean, a Napa Vine or a Kalama or maybe a Tri-City Prep, you know, could give Onalaska, you know, a run for its money. But right now, 2 weeks out, and given what the slate of games that all those number ones have to play, I don't see anybody, taking that over before the seeding committee meets here in a couple weeks. I would fully expect that the six teams that we have ranked number one that are almost the consensus number one in most of the polls around the state, I would suspect that they're probably most likely going to be the number one seeds going into the state playoffs here in a couple weeks.
Scorebookelect.com/Washington is where you'll find our wall-to-wall coverage of the high school football season here in Washington. You can head to Apple Podcasts and rate, review, subscribe, search Scorebook Live today, and find us there. You'll get free episodes downloaded automatically to your phone, your mobile device each week. So please follow along with us. We're going to start ramping these up. It's, you know, as we get closer to, I know we'll have plenty to talk about throughout the postseason for football as that intersects with all of our work on the basketball previews. So we will talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.